This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here, when the people speak, we make a difference. I guess we make a difference. I'm not so sure. In the case of Helen Thomas, an American author and former news service reporter, member of the White House Press Corps, and columnist, she worked for the United Press International for 57 years, first as a correspondent and later as a White House bureau chief. She was an opinion columnist for Hearst newspapers from the year 2000 to 2010, writing on national affairs and the White House. Unfortunately, it would seem that Helen Thomas did not have an opinion, though. She was an opinion columnist that was forced to resign from her position based on comments that she made under the Free Speech Amendment, the First Amendment of the United States of America. Hello, Helen. Welcome to my radio show. It is a pleasure and an honor to have you with me tonight.
Thank you.
Helen, Helen was recently in the metropolitan Detroit area.
My hometown.
For a workshop. In her hometown. She was raised, she was born in Winchester, Kentucky, and raised in Detroit, Michigan. Helen is a valued member of our community, and she was here for a couple of reasons. One, for a workshop called Images and Perceptions of Arab Communities. And the other one was for the unveiling of an incredible statue in her honor at the Arab American Museum. During the event, Helen spoke at the workshop presented by Siham Jaffar and Warren David, and her comments led her to lose her award for now the award itself, Helen, was called the Helen Thomas Award for Diversity, if I'm not mistaken.
Spirit of Diversity.
Spirit of Diversity in the Media Award.
And that's the irony. And that's the irony.
Now, some people have have said that in the spirit of diversity, Helen is not a very diverse person since she has made comments against Zionism. Unfortunately, I don't see where diversity comes into this, Helen. Do you?
No, not at all. I am not anti-Semitic. I am against Israeli policies toward the Palestinians. And they don't let you make that distinction, but it's true.
Now, Helen, in all of the reports, one of the things when we were at dinner, one of the things that I remember you saying when asked how are you enjoying your retirement, you said I am not retired. I was fired. But in every single column that I have read on this topic, they have said that you voluntarily resigned. Is that
true? Well, that's
Helen?
True. I did because I had to.
You were forced into a resignation.
I think I was treated okay. You know, life goes on.
Well, that's fair enough. Now, Helen, do you believe that, let me ask you this, do you, Helen, believe that if you make a comment that is anti-Zionist or anti-Republican or anti-Democrat and they happen to be Jews within that community, that you are an anti-Semite?
Absolutely not. I'm anti-Israeli policies toward the Palestinians, and they won't let me make that distinction because it helps their own cause. Propaganda cause.
And how, well, here you, Helen, have been attacked, maligned, You've lost, you've been forced to relinquish your position. You have lost a diversity award that you endowed to Wayne State University. That's another thing. Plus, they're calling for all other universities have any awards in your name to be removed. Do you believe that you are being treated fairly in this case?
I believe that the Israelis, pro-Israelis, are trying to dole out punishment, but they can't punish me. They can't deny how I've lived and what I've worked for, my sense of equality, the contributions I've had made to gender equality in journalism. Let them try. I mean, they can take the icons away, they can take the sculptors away, but they can't take away my life in that sense of what I've done for journalism. And for the First Amendment. Well, who are they? I mean, what is their problem? Why can't they take any opposition? What's the problem?
What is it? What is the problem?
I don't understand it anymore than you do. They can't stand dissent in any way. They're always right. I mean, I pity them. Truly, I do.
I have to agree with you because I've always considered the majority of Israelis to be the first victims of the propaganda Zionist regime. And I have no qualms about that. And I don't believe I'm an anti-Semite either, because then I wouldn't like you, since you are a Semite, Ellen.
And that's right, and they are not. They use this term because it evokes terrible things that happened to the Jews before World War II. And it was horrible. There's no question. But I'm alive now, and I have known the history of these things. And I don't like to see them repeated against the Arab world, and the Palestinians especially. They, of all people, should know what the problem is.
Well, yeah, but unfortunately, if anybody knows anything about the cycle of violence, acts perpetrated upon people create another cycle of violence. So that's the problem here.
I don't understand what their problem. Why do they have to try to deny me one day? It doesn't matter, really. I know who I am. I know what I believe. I know what I've done.
Helen, you are an icon of free and open discourse in a hallmark of democracy. And there are not only good Americans that are standing, but good Jews in this country that are standing
absolutely
up and defending.
They believe in
you.
Freedom, and so do I. And they don't
absolutely
believe in tyrannizing other people.
And some people say that these are unfortunate arguments. If they are unfortunate arguments, then our presidents, every one of the presidents under your watch, Helen, have mm-hmm. admitted that the settlements in Israel are the main reason for the discourse between the Palestinians and the Arabs.
And their colonies, what they are, they take their land, they take their water, they torch their orchards. I mean, they can't stand. They build walls. They build Israeli-only roads. I mean, whoa. Who would tolerate that? When they're in the indigenous population, they have come from nowhere to take this, taking what does not belong to them?
One of the articles made comment about the Israeli-only roads that you had said, would Americans accept white-only roads here,
right,
the way the Palestinians
especially
have
during the
Jewish
civil rights movement.
Exactly. And you know, people are astounded by that, and they call that anti-Semitic. Well, then the truth is anti-Semitic because there are Jewish-only roads.
That's right. I didn't make that up. I wish it didn't exist. There are walls built.
We all wish it didn't exist.
Walls separating Palestinian land. Absolutely illegal. It's illegal to annex occupied land. That's under international law. And everybody should start obeying it.
And I just want you to know, Helen, that I know here in the metropolitan Detroit area in Michigan that you have an incredible amount of supporters, and I think you felt that when you were here.
Absolutely. And it's nice to hear that. But I mean, I don't want people to get into trouble. They could lose their jobs or anything else. That's the kind of power that's exerted over us.
And it is true. It is true. There is an incredible amount of power that the Zionist regime wields in this country. You know, nobody has a problem with calling AIPAC a Zionist lobby that wields tremendous power.
Or the demonization of all Arabs.
Or yes.
Nobody protests that. But you say one thing about Israel, and you are really in bad company.
One of your questions to each of the presidents has always been what, Helen? You have one main question that you usually ask.
What country? Is there any country that is in the Middle East that has nuclear weapons?
And this question you've asked to just about every president, haven't
President
you?
Obama, no, more recently, President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And they each have shoved it off. They will not answer it honestly. It's too bad, you know. We have a right to know almost everything. That's why I like WikiLeaks.
Well, I like WikiLeaks, too, and a lot of people are opposed to that, but my position on WikiLeaks is that in a nation where we no longer have a system of checks and balances, where our government agents have proven themselves not only to be corrupt, but have admitted to the corruption, that
the American people have the right to know almost everything the government does, but most governments I've covered are secretive, and they don't want the people to know the truth. They don't even tell us why we're in wars. I mean, how do we tolerate that? Why did we go into Iraq? To this day, neither President Bush or even Obama can say why we're there, because they're ashamed to say it.
This isn't the first time you've been in trouble, have you? Is it, Helen?
Well, I mean, it's worth it. I'm exercising my rights, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom to be.
Absolutely. And as I said, I think the curious thing is that the Zion, and I think this is the misunderstanding that most people have, although Zionists would have people believe that this is about Jews. It isn't necessarily about Jews. There are Christian Zionists. There are evangelical
exactly.
Zionists. There are Protestant Zionists. There are Zionists of every creed and color in the planet. But the association always goes back to Jewish Zionists. Now, let me say this. Unfortunately, a lot of Jews are Zionists. That is not the fault of Helen Thomas. That isn't my fault. That isn't any of our faults.
But it is my fault to let them keep usurping land that does not belong to them and is totally illegal under international law.
Well, now I agree with. And, you know, shame on us as Americans that we are going to continue to allow people like Helen Thomas, people that are speaking the truth, to be pushed and pulled in any direction that seems to fit a propagandist agenda, an agenda that is so. Helen, will you state, one of your questions was, will you state for the record, for the historical record, why Bush wants to bomb Iraqi people? That was one of your questions.
You tell me. He has never told the truth. They now acknowledge the lies about weapons of mass destruction, ties to Al-Qaeda. None of it true. Thousands dead, thousands maimed, Iraqis and Americans. For what? Let them tell the truth just once. There have been many so-called reasons, because of daddy, because of oil or whatever. We still do not know why we went in. They wanted to get Saddam Hussein. That's not a reason enough to kill thousands of people.
Helen, are there others like you in Washington?
I doubt it. They're not that stupid.
Oh, come on. I think are brave. I think brave would be the
nobody's
question.
Going to stick their necks out. Why should they? They could lose their jobs. They could lose their friends. A whole passel of things.
And that happens in Washington.
Yes, it does. And in the country. Now, every university. I thought we were supposed to be a free country. Well,
you know,
I think since 9/11, we've lost a lot of our liberties. No question about that.
Yes. What about the Patriots Act, Helen? How do you feel about that?
Terrible.
You think it should be rescinded?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. I don't think every American should be suspect. And that's what it does.
Unbelievable. Helen, I keep going back to, as you said, our universities are in danger, I think. And I think people need to understand what has happened. This was the work of one man, the Wayne State University president.
Right.
And
That's about as autocratic as I've ever heard of anything.
And Abe Foxman, who went directly to the administration at Wayne State and demanded
who represents the American Israeli Political Action Committee.
Yes.
And if the universities are going to bow to him, and what is his axe to grind? He's not for freedom. He's for Israel, period.
Helen, I don't know if you even, well, a friend of mine asked, what right was violated? Which one of your rights was violated?
I don't think my rights were violated, except the intimidation you get when you speak out, and you speak out what you believe is the truth.
Well, if the award was taken based on comments that you made, isn't that a violation of your rights? You are being punished?
I don't think it's violation, but I think I am being punished. And I'm shocked that my colleagues and the university presidents would go along with such intimidation. They represent nothing in terms of freedom if they go along with that.
You know, it's frightening to know that our children go to universities that and what are they going to learn from this? They're going to learn that here we're going to charge you $65,000 to $120,000 in tuition fees to get an education that you better be careful if you use.
They're supposed to be teaching democracy, and real democracy is the essence of freedom, and freedom of thought, and freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion.
The issue of freedom, racism is even an acceptable. We don't like racism. Nobody likes racism. I don't know on my end and within the community that I'm in. I don't know a lot of people that like Zionism. They consider that a form of racism. So. Just don't speak about it, folks, because, well, I guess it doesn't matter if you speak about it as long as you're not anybody in the news. But if you're someone like Helen Thomas, what happens? This is unfortunate, and it's not only unfortunate. I have to tell you, I believe it's a clear violation of your rights, Helen. I know people don't see it as that.
No. I mean, people want to pull. Opposition is okay. It's definitely a part of freedom. It's so shallow, though. It's so piteous. I can't believe that academics would take such a stand to deny me my right to speak. Why?
I have a question here from a gentleman. Bobby in California asks, has the White House President Obama offered any help to you in regards to what is going on?
He's only called me reprehensible and offensive. And we have the same birthday. little difference in age, of course.
Wow. Wow, amazing.
Offensive and reprehensible because I defend the Palestinians against human tyranny.
Well, he has been a failure.
For some president, isn't he? Pardon?
For the Palestinian cause, most certainly. How do you feel about Netanyahu's refusal to freeze, to start another moratorium or a freeze on the settlements, and based on the fact that, America said that they're not doing it based on the fact that they were busy with the WikiLeaks.
Is that right?
That's what I heard tonight.
I think that U.S. and Israel have no right to violate international law. You are not allowed to annex occupied land. They are totally illegal, and I think that the U.S. should shut down any contributions to the state of Israel. And the U.N. should start enforcing the law.
Absolutely. And this is, this has often been a question that I, as a Palestinian, have been asked, Helen. They say, well, so what is the solution, Basma? What is the solution? How do you fix this? And I say, it's easy. You want to make it complex, but it really isn't. Just apply the law equally. And when I say equally, I don't mean apply the law to Palestine and let Israel get away with scot-free. I mean apply the law equally. If we applied the law, none of these things would be applicable. We wouldn't be arguing about settlements because the settlements are illegal. They wouldn't be happening. We wouldn't be arguing about the fence that they call the fence. The wall is illegal. All of these things are illegal. Apply the law.
And let the U.S. back it up. For once.
Well, the U.S. is really busy with WikiLeaks right now, apparently, Helen.
I love them.
They're too
I love
busy
the truth when
anything.
It comes out, even in, especially through whistleblowers.
Absolutely. Julian.
It's always at a price, though.
Unfortunately, it is. Right now, there's a mad scramble, from what I understand, to find charges to charge Julian Assange with. They're trying to find charges.
It's so sad. He's done a great, he's made a contribution to truth.
Well, that's it right there. He's made a contribution to truth. And, the interesting thing, Helen, how do you feel about the Obama administration and how they are handling the issues of the war in Afghanistan, Iraq, Palestinian issue, the economy?
No guts, no glory. President Obama had one chance to get out of Iraq and Afghanistan the day after he took his oath of office. He could have done it then. He said, we're leaving. There is no point to remaining here, no reason to keep killing and dying. But he didn't have the courage. He's never had any courage. And I think it's one of his saddest commentary about him.
And what are your greatest concerns, Helen, about the future of our country in light of a potential Republican landslide next
week? We have no leaders in the world, and especially in our country. That is so sad. We should have someone calling for world disarmament, put aside all the nuclear weapons, start treating people with humanity. I mean, the lines on the Jefferson Memorial of, I swear, eternal hostility to any form of tyranny over the minds of men.
There's a question here from Fred in Wyoming, and he asks, I recall seeing the YouTube tape many months ago before it became publicized. Do you think the timing of its release is suspect?
Of what?
I'm not sure what Fred is asking, actually. Fred, could you clarify? You said you saw the YouTube tape. The tape of what? I'm not sure, but while I get an answer on that, we will go to John from Canada. John, thank you for your tenacity and courage and your example, Ms. Thomas. Do you think that good will prevail? And if so, what is the most important thing we can do to ensure it? Thank you and miles of smiles to you.
The people of the world, the people of America, should read up on the history and find out why we have had this perennial problem. What is the answer? And I think if more and more people would be educated about the Middle East, we'd be far ahead.
How can we, as Arab Americans in this country, and I know that you don't consider yourself an Arab American, you consider yourself an American.
Absolutely.
I too consider myself a full American, but nothing in my citizenship papers when I came to this country and I was grandfathered under my mother, nothing in the papers ever asked me to relinquish my history, my heritage, or anything.
And it never should. You can't deny yourself.
All it did was ask me to give total allegiance to the United States, which we do. Now, in light of those things, how can we make a difference? How can we help teach people the truth?
By being great citizens, by speaking up, by using all the tools of democracy to spread the good word.
Well, I'll tell you, it's frightening when we see our heroines and our heroes, our icons of our community, Helen, treated the way you have been treated, shamelessly. And, you know, I think that it is unbelievably gracious of you, in light of what you have been through in the last few months, based on what I believe is erroneous information. Zionism is a political entity. There are Jews that are Republicans and Jews that are Democrats. So, in other words, if we speak up against Democrats or
Republicans... And many of them I love. They've been my mentors.
And are you an anti-Semitic if you speak about the Republican Party or the Democratic Party?
No.
Because there are Jews among them?
We're all name callers, aren't we? So sad.
I guess so. It is. I guess so. We certainly are, and it is sad. Who was your favorite president, Helen?
President Kennedy, because I thought he had his eyes on the stars. He told young people to go into public service, that it could be the crown of their career. He had been in war. He knew the horrors of war. Both he and Khrushchev of the Soviet Union stepped back from the brink. They each knew they had arsenals, nuclear arsenals, to blow up the world, and they cared more about people. But plus the fact that President Kennedy said, we're going to land men on the moon in a decade. Didn't live to see it, but we did it. He had great goals. He knew that the sky was not the limit.
In light of the fact that President Obama did not take advantage of his opportunity to extract the United States from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, do you feel that there is hope to end this war?
Of course, all wars end. But they should be sooner, because we are going to be taking more and more lives, hurting more and more people, maiming more and more people, displacing more and more people. Why?
And what would you say to Benjamin Netanyahu today if he stood before you?
I would say that he is absolutely illegal, and unfortunately he is hurting thousands and thousands of people so unfairly.
You know, many people in Israel feel that it's inevitable that there will be a solution or a resolution to this Israeli-Palestinian issue. Do you think that the resolution can even begin to be fair to Palestinians under the circumstances?
It has to be, or else they should not accept it. You should never accept anything in total weakness. And that's the Palestinians have no hand in this card game. And they should not give in. They should not give in. They have rights, and they should be respected. And the Israelis should certainly know that by now. This land belongs to them. It's their homeland. It is the land of their forefathers, not the land of people who came by aggression and war.
There was another time, Helen, when you said the United States is not that helpless. It could have stopped the bombardment of Lebanon. We have that much control with the Israelis. Do you really believe that we have that much control with them?
When President Eisenhower in 1956 told the French, the British, and the Israelis to get the hell out of Suez, they did it because they knew the power of the U.S. The power has not diminished.
And
Eisenhower won the election over Adlai Stevenson, who supported the invasion of Suez, which is a great credit to the American people of how they voted.
Well, and here we are, how many years later, Helen, still looking at the same thing, still telling them to get the hell out of Palestine, and they're not listening.
No, because we don't have support of the U.S. anymore. It's totally one-sided.
Absolutely. I agree with you. It is totally one-sided. There's a question for you, Helen, from Shannon in Canada. And
okay.
Shannon asked, do you think that John Kennedy Jr. would have been presidential material?
Absolutely. He had a brain. He had great charm. I think that he was very fair to people, so he would have been wonderful.
Amazing.
And it's a tragedy.
I agree with you. I do agree with you, and it was a great tragedy, a great loss for this country when he died so suddenly and so sadly at a young age. Let me see another question. This is one of your statements, Hal. When are you going to get out of Afghanistan? Why are you continuing to kill and die there? What is the real truth? And don't give us this Bushism. If we don't go there, they'll come here. Do you really believe they're going to come here?
No. Occasionally, there could be terrorism, which was invented by the Israelis and the Irgun, Stern Gang, and Haganah before the State of Israel was created. I don't believe they'll all come here, but I believe they certainly have they have reasons for revenge when their homes have been bombed, when their people have been thrown from their homes, when they're refugees for 60 years out of their own land. They might be very unhappy, a few, but I'm not talking. They certainly all won't come here.
Now, Helen, I want to ask you one question about Octavia Nasser. You know Octavia.
Mm-hmm. No, I never met her.
Oh, you've never met her? Okay. And do you find any similarities in what happened to Octavia and what happened to you?
Well, I think she's paid a heavy price. She was 20 years head of the Middle East Division at CNN, and then she praised the cleric who had helped women in the Middle East and helped promote them, but he had been dubbed a terrorist by the U.S., so I think it was very unfair to her. And anyway, it was poking into her private mail. Very unfair.
Very unfair.
And I don't understand CNN doing that.
Well, I don't understand it either. And isn't that what's happening with Julian Assange? Somebody is poking into private mail. We have a question from Bobby in California. He asked, does Helen have any job offers as a journalist today? Would she entertain any offers, or does she feel her career is over?
I don't feel my career is open. It's over, and I certainly resent Mr. Foxman and a few others writing me off. They have no right to do that. I live my own life, and I'm not afraid of not getting any bids for work, but I have had some.
Bobby also asked, would you entertain working for BBC or Al Jazeera or any other international agency?
Sure, bring them on.
All right. There you go.
I'm being very glib.
That's wonderful. Tosca in Portland, Oregon asks, Helen, the White House press corps, to us it appears to have evolved into a cheerleading club in recent years. In your opinion, how did this happen?
Well, it's been going along that way since the Bushes in power and since Reagan. I think that journalists have lost their courage, and they want to belong, and they also know the pitfalls. I mean, we're kind of a dying industry. Everybody with a laptop thinks they're a journalist. But unfortunately, we have no editors, and anything can be said. So it's great to be a journalist, and it's also great to keep integrity about your role and not harm anyone. Anything we write could hurt anyone.
Absolutely, absolutely. Helen, when you were in Michigan and we spoke, I told you a friend of mine, Cassia, had from Florida, had asked me to ask you a question. She said, please write an expose, and your response to me was, what would I expose? I don't know. What would you expose if you could write one, Helen?
I would just like to explain the secrecy in government that I believe is so unnecessary. I think the more we know, the better off we are. And I think that governments tend to try to suppress all truth. I mean, when I have President Obama and Hillary Clinton telling me they don't know of any country in the Middle East that has nuclear weapons, they didn't put it that bluntly. But they dance around such an important subject where we tell Iran every moment, you cannot have these weapons.
I'll tell you, I hate to stop this, Helen, because I absolutely love talking to you. It is so refreshing to speak to a journalist that's honest, forthright, and honorable. Bravo.
Thank you. I don't know about that. I mean, my name has been so defamed around the world.
Well, you have a lot of friends here. I'll tell you that on the People Speak Radio, Helen. Helen, thank you so much for being with us. I will keep you informed on what's happening here. If I don't, I'm sure Siham will. Abby, I know you're listening. You have a great one.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you, Helen, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
We have
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, wait a minute. We do have a caller? Oh, sorry about that. Well, we'll have to ask her back. I apologize to the caller.
No. She dropped off.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Let's get our second guest then. Okay, there you go. That's Don, our board operator. Thank you, Don Newsom.
They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us. But for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now. A public service message brought to you by Earthshare and the Ad Council.
Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth, Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes, we can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes, we can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and Wiki spaces where you can share and collaborate? Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution. If you are prone to being disturbed by real truth and real solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economist on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Welcome, and it's a pleasure to have you all with us. Our second guest tonight for the evening is Ellen Brown. Ellen is an attorney in Los Angeles and the author of 11 books, one of them being the very important book, The Web of Debt, The Shocking Truth About Our Money System and How We Can Break Free, which shows how the private banking cartel has usurped the power to create money from the people themselves and how we can get back. Her website is www.webofdebt.com, and there are a lot of answers that Ellen has. Hi, Ellen. Welcome back to The People Speak.
Oh, thanks. Great to be talking to you.
Ellen, QE2. Can you give it to us in layman's terms? What the heck is QT? QE2.
Quantitative easing 2. It's the second round of quantitative easing by the Federal Reserve. The first round was $1.2 trillion it's not actually money that they just put out there. People call it money printing, but in fact, they don't print money. All they do is put book entries into accounts. But what they did with the QE1 was to buy $1.2 trillion of mortgage-backed securities off the books of the banks. So the banks got cash, and the Fed wound up with the mortgage-backed securities. But apparently, they were toxic assets in the sense that you couldn't sell them right now. Nobody wanted them because, you know, of the whole CDO, mortgage-backed security problem. So you couldn't. There was no market for them right now, and that's why they were clogging up the books of the banks because of this. When they changed the rules so that the banks had to do their accounting according to what their assets were valued at today, not at what the bank said they were worth because maybe they were still paying. But they actually were still paying. I mean, these were most of these mortgages that people do pay, even though they weren't very good credit risk. And so the Fed did get their money back on this deal, apparently. And so because the borrowers are paying regularly on these mortgage-backed securities. So now the Fed has a bunch of cash to do something with. Apparently, there's something like $300 billion that came in from that. But in addition, they're going to use another $600 billion fresh, which is just money they create on their books. But what they're going to do with it is to buy U.S. Treasuries. In other words, they're going to buy government debt. So I think this is actually a good thing. I mean, finally, they're coming around to doing something useful with this tool. It obviously didn't help us that they cleaned up the books of the banks because the banks didn't pass that benefit on. They haven't been lending to businesses and consumers, and the money isn't making it into Main Street or making it to the states, which are still bankrupt. In fact, what they were doing with the money is they were investing overseas, buying commodities, driving the commodities prices up, doing bad things. But now this money is going directly into buying government bonds, long-term government bonds. These are the 10-year bonds. So effectively, what QE2 is doing is buying the deficit. It's allowing the government to operate for another 9 months without having to raise taxes, basically, or cut services. You know, there's the austerity hawks that think we should be cutting services and privatizing Social Security and all that. I mean, which would be a disaster. We absolutely don't want that to happen, and that's why I think QE2 is a good thing. The thing about the Fed is they now rebate their profits to the government after deducting their costs. They didn't used to when they were set up. When the Fed was set up in 1913, they lent money to us and charged us interest on it. They printed our money, lent it to the government, and charged interest on it. And that was clearly not right. And Wright Patman figured that out in the 1960s. He was head of the House Banking and Currency Committee, and he tried to nationalize them. And so to avoid being nationalized, what they did was they agreed to return their profits to the government. So in that sense, they're semi-captive. In other words, it's the cheapest place that the government can get money is to borrow from the Fed, because the Fed will give the interest back.
And we are paying, from my understanding, from everything that I read about QE2, is that we are actually paying less interest than ever before on this?
Right, because they return the interest. The interest is the same, but because the Fed returns the interest to the government, it doesn't increase our interest bill. And we can't afford to have the interest tab to go up on the debt, because the federal debt has risen by 50% in the last 4 years, since 2006, more than 50%. But the interest bill is the same, and the reason is that they push the interest down to really low levels. But if they add any more debt, which they are doing, obviously, they keep adding more debt, then that would drive the total interest bill that we, the taxpayers, have to pay. It would drive that bill up, and we can't afford that. So if we fund it through our own Federal Reserve, we can avoid that extra interest payment, and that's why I think it's a good thing. Better yet would be if they would actually buy state bonds, and I saw a proposal to that effect, and I think I'll write on that next, that that's what they should do.
Well, that's interesting. I want to ask you a personal question. I am not an economist by any way, shape, or means. I need my fingers and my toes to add, Ellen, but let me ask you something. With the run on gold that's been happening lately, is it possible, and, you know, we hear this all the time, and I personally believe that eventually we're going to be forced. I mean, if we are basing our credibility on our monetary system, on our the trust factor, we don't have a lot of credibility, or a lot of countries don't trust us. So is it logical that the gold standard would return at one point?
I don't think so, because, I mean, gold is certainly a good investment, and I have gold myself, and it's obviously going up. So, and I don't know, I mean, it does look rather like a bubble, and it could well pop, but the fact that it's a good investment is because there are no other good investments. Nobody trusts anything except commodities these days, and so all the hot money is going into commodities. There used to be a lot of money in housing that has fled, and it has to go somewhere, so it's going into commodities. But to return to the gold standard is just not workable. It didn't work in the first place. That's why they had to set up the Federal Reserve, and that's why we had the Great Depression, and that's why we went off the gold standard before. Here's what happened when we were on the gold standard. If you had a 100% gold standard, it wouldn't work, because where are you going to get the gold? I mean, we have a $15 trillion money supply, counting all M1, M2, M3. So you're going to have to turn that all into gold. So if you just took the gold in Fort Knox, we don't know that there's any gold in Fort Knox, for one thing.
Nobody does. Rumors. That's true.
Yeah, there's rumors that there's nothing there. It hasn't been audited since the 50s, not an independent audit. So your dollar is probably going to be a speck that you would lose in your wallet, unless maybe they laminate them and put them in big plastic containers or something. But beyond that, you're going to have, like, most of the gold is held by foreign central banks, or by, you know, worn by Indians around their necks, et cetera. So how are you going to get that gold if you say, you know, give me your gold, and they say, what are you going to buy it with? And you say, well, here, take some of these paper dollars. And they would say, well, your paper dollars aren't going to be worth anything. So there's that. There are practical issues. But another issue is that you really can't work a system that's a fixed a fixed amount of money. It has to be expandable just because of the nature of, if you're going to have growth of an economy, you have to have a growing money supply. Otherwise, you wind up with a depression like we're heading toward right now, or you wind up with what the European Union has. They have a fixed money supply. There's nobody that can create extra money, and that's why everybody's in debt, and they're all trying to borrow from each other, which isn't working. They're all drowning together because it's the nature of debt that it expands, you know, that you're lent $10 and then you have to pay $11 back. Where's the extra money going to come from? Somewhere there has to be the ability to create credit.
All right. Let me ask you what the difference is, or what you perceive to be the difference between QE1 and 2.
Okay, QE1, the money went to the banks, which was a bad idea. QE2, the money is going to the Treasury, which is a good idea. The Treasury is the government, and the government needs interest-free funding, and that's the only way they can get. It's not quite interest-free, but it's close.
And, well, you know, I have a question here from Bob in Massachusetts, and he asks, the federal debt is projected to be $14 trillion shortly. The GDP of the USA is $14.8 trillion, meaning that debt represents 99% of the GDP. How do you perceive the impact of this dreadful ratio?
Well, it's actually not... It's not what it appears, because it's not that bad, really, because the worst debt-to-GDP ratio we ever had was during World War II, and that was the most productive thing we ever did. That was when we were building infrastructure all over the place, and we set the country up for the next 50 years of productive growth. The government's debt is a totally different thing from your private debt, because the government debt is never, ever paid off. If you look at a chart of the debt, it goes all the way back to 1838. The last time it was paid off was under Andrew Jackson. But the government's debt is our money supply, and you can see that by the fact that the GDP and the money supply is also up there close to $15 trillion. They're all $15 trillion. In other words, somebody has to have a minus for somebody else to have a plus, because all of our money is debt. There's nothing in our money system except debt, except for a few coins, which are just tokens, really. That's such a small percentage.
So we are going to pay the debt off with debt?
No, we'll never pay the debt off. We don't pay off the debt. Well, what we should do, in order to make it clean so everybody can see what's really going on here, we should pay it off with dollars. Everybody thinks that would be inflationary, but it wouldn't, because the debt itself is dollars. As somebody explained, and I thought it was a brilliant analogy, it's like one is more liquid than the other. So it's like water and ice. So you can, the bonds are ice, and you turn them into water, and you've got the same amount of stuff there. It's just that one is more liquid than the other. You can spend the dollars. But the people who are holding the bonds think that they have, like if you have a $100 bond, you think you've got $100. You look at your account and you think, I have $100 there. I could go spend that any time, because you can always cash the bond in, and the government's always good for it. They'll always give you the cash. So if they just turned them all into cash, then we'd know what we're talking about here. We've got a $15 trillion money supply, and it's not debt. It's just dollars.
Helen, some people believe that QE2 will devalue the dollar, and if that happens, I know that I have read that was similar to what happened, isn't it, in Zimbabwe?
No. In Zimbabwe, what happened, and in all those currencies that have collapsed, what happens is that the country has been forced to and has tried to pay off a debt owed in a currency over which they had no control by printing their own. So in Zimbabwe, they had this big IMF debt owed in dollars. And the only way they could get dollars was to go to the foreign exchange market, which is totally manipulated. You know, it's not a set price, it's supply and demand. So they'd come in with their Zimbabwe dollars. The speculators see them coming. In fact, there's good evidence that it was intentional. It was intended to kill the Zimbabwe economy, because the idea was to get Mugabe out of there. It was, you know, it was actually, the intent was regime change, just as it was in Germany and, you know, all these places where the currency collapsed because they've had to pay off a foreign debt, not in their own currency. But our debts are owed in dollars, so there's no way we can default on our debt, and we can do just like we're doing now, which is borrow from our own central bank, and we don't have to worry about the foreigners at all. So there's the concern that $600 billion will dilute the value of the currency, but it won't. And the reason is that our money supply all consists of debt, and the debt has collapsed. So the money supply has collapsed. So all the $600 billion does is make a dent in filling that empty pitcher back up. But it's not even close to the amount that we lost. I saw one figure that it was actually $15 trillion that we lost in terms of house values, stock values, all that stuff is considered money. When you see that you've got $100,000 in stocks or whatever, you think that's what you've got, and you go out and you start spending as if that's what you've got. And then if that all of a sudden drops down to $50,000, you think, oh dear, I've got to start saving. And then you don't spend anymore. So then there's no money competing for goods. So then people get laid off because there are no customers, and then that's what a depression is. You've got to get the money back there in order to get the machinery working again. So that's,
do you think this will actually help the situation that is not so bad? Because to be quite honest with you, Helen, it feels bad to a lot of people. It feels really
bad. I know. Well, that's why I bothered to write, and I've taken a lot of flack for saying anything nice about anything the Federal Reserve did. But you know, everybody can reinvent themselves. It seems to me it's like children. You ignore bad behavior and reward good behavior.
Well, unfortunately, though, people believe that the Federal Reserve reinvents itself to suit itself, not necessarily to suit what's happening.
Well, we have a Congress which is totally gridlocked. They can't do any, or they're not going to do anything, because the Republicans aren't going to let taxes go up, and the Democrats aren't going to let services get slashed. So, and they're certainly not going to do anything about monetary policy. So there's only one party here that can do anything, and that is the head of the Fed. He's the only guy that can just step in there and tell you what he's going to do. So that's why if he does something that I think is a good idea, it seems to me we shouldn't all be getting all over him, that we should acknowledge that this could be a good thing.
So you do think that this is a good thing, his recent
action? QE2. I don't think QE1 was a good thing at all. That was a mistake.
Okay. Recently, President Obama has made some decisions on the tax stuff. Can you tell us what you think about all of that?
Oh, sorry, I'm not sure. I'm actually traveling right now, so I haven't been keeping up with the news.
On his continuing the tax cuts that President Bush.
I understand. I mean, I just did hear a bit of the news while I was in the car yesterday, and that in return, he's requiring that unemployment benefits be extended,
right,
and so forth. So that's right. I mean,
but
I don't think I've agreed on that yet. Yeah, I'm not sure. But I don't think the solution is either to. It's not in the taxes, and it's not in the budget at all. The problem is in the money supply, and this can be fixed. It can be fixed by getting some credit out there, some money back out there. My particular thing that I'm working on right now, and I'm giving several presentations right now in California, in Northern California on it, that's why I'm up here, is that we can get the credit mechanism going again locally. That's where we need to attack it, and in the states. So if states had their own banks, they could issue credit in the very same way that the Federal Reserve does. They could be creating credit for their states and getting the economy rolling again. And there's one state that does this, North Dakota. It's the only state in the union that actually has a surplus. They're in the enviable position of having to choose whether to cut taxes or add more services. They don't know what to do with all this surplus money. They have the biggest surplus they've ever had. They did last year. And mm-hmm. this is because they didn't get caught in this credit crisis because they have their own credit machine. The Bank of North Dakota does what the securitization market did for other banks, you know, where the banks would, they have like an 8% capital requirement, so then they can, with $8 of capital, they can create $100 in loans, and then that's all they can do, unless that what they did was they would sell off the loans to investors, and then they could create $100 more in loans and $100 more, but that was where they got into the whole subprime thing, because they didn't care what kind of loans they were making, because they weren't going to be handling them. They gave them off to the sucker investors. But in North Dakota,
Dylan, why is it that in North Dakota there is this model? It's obviously working, and why aren't other states picking up on this?
Well, that's why I keep talking about it. I don't think anybody really noticed it. I think they purposely were staying under the radar for one thing, in order not to get criticized, because they were criticized when they first set it up in 1919. I mean, it was a tough battle to get that thing instituted, and so they're just operating like a good bank. But we're looking at their balance sheet; it's really quite remarkable. They have they're very profitable. It's a very good business model, and that's what I'm talking about, is how we could do the same business model right here in California. I'm not enough of an expert to be able to draft a whole bill on, you know, how we would set up the bank. But what I'm thinking we should have is a bill to study these things, to study the possibility, and get some experts in here, some banking experts, and see how it can be done. That it's not that we haven't been taxed enough, and it's not that we're spending too much, the government is spending too much. The problem is that the credit system is collapsed. The problem is in the banking system, and so we need to fix the banking system, and we can do that with public banks where the profits return to the public, and that's a sustainable model.
So what we have to do is ask for our credit cards back.
Well, you could have a public bank that issued credit cards, very low interest, yeah.
Yeah, that might be I'm sure a lot of Americans would like that, especially now, especially people that are out of work. You know, Ellen, it's always a pleasure talking to you. You are just a wealth of information. Again, I am going to ask you to come back with us soon, because your position makes sense. I understand you're taking a lot of flack. Let's hope more people will start to listen to you.
Thank you.
Well, thank Great you, question. Ellen Brown, ladies and gentlemen. Go to her website,
www.webofdebt.com.
I'm doing it off the cuff here. I took my glasses off. You can't do that at my age. Ellen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You have a great evening. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us on the People Speak Radio.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.